Welcome to the market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Friday, December 8, Chicago, Illinois. Hello again, along with Max Armstrong. I'm Orion Samuelson. Left the desert this week to come back to the Midwest, and what a change in temperature, as winter has definitely arrived in parts of the country. Even cooled off in the desert in Arizona for a few days, but their main concern there is lack of rain. They have, I think, set a record now of 105 days without rain measurable in Phoenix. So in the desert, they do need rain because they only get about 8 inches a year. But so much for the weather. Let's take a look at what happened this week and today in the commodity markets and on Wall Street. First of all, Labor Department delivered some pretty good news today in the monthly labor unemployment report, and that sent the stock market higher, not sharply higher, but indeed higher on the day. So let's, first of all, we'll look at the numbers for the week. The S&P gained about a third of a percent. The Dow added nearly 0.5%, and the Nasdaq dropped 11%. So the Dow Industrial Average for the day up 117 points, ending at 24,329. The S&P 500 gained 14 points for the day to end at 2651, and the NASDAQ composite added 27 points for the day, ending the day and the week at 6840. Now, let's look at the numbers in jobs and employment. First of all, Thursday, the number of Americans filing for unemployment benefits unexpectedly fell. Initial claims for state unemployment benefits dropped 2,000 to 236,000 for the week ended December 2. And data for the prior week was unrevised, so it was the third weekly, straight weekly decline in claims for unemployment benefits. Well, then let's come to today, Friday, the end of the week, and the monthly employment report from the Labor Department. Job growth increased at a strong clip in November and wages rebounded. That paints a portrait of a pretty healthy economy that analysts say really doesn't require the kind of fiscal stimulus that President Trump is proposing. Non-farm payrolls went up by 228,000 jobs last month. Analysts were looking for an increase of about 200,000 or so, but non-farm payrolls made good gains as the distortions from the recent hurricanes also faded. The government revised data for October to show the economy adding 244,000 jobs instead of the previously reported 261,000 positions. But employment gains in October were boosted by the return to work of thousands of employees who had been temporarily dislocated by Hurricanes Harvey and Irma. And then November's report, the first really clean reading since the storms, which also impacted September's employment information. Average hourly earnings up 5 cents, that's 0.2% in November. That lifted the annual increase in wages to 2.5% from 2.3% in October. And workers also put in more hours last month. The average work week rose to 34.5 hours from 34.4 hours in October. The unemployment rate, that stayed unchanged at a 17-year low of 4.1%. amid a rise in the labor force. And as I said, we got a 228,000 jobs added number, and economists were looking for about 200,000 last month. While November's employment report will probably have little impact on expectations the Federal Reserve will raise interest rates at its December 12-13 policy meeting, it could help shape the debate on monetary policy next year. The U.S. Central Bank has increased borrowing costs twice this year and has predicted 3 rate hikes in 2018. Average employment growth has averaged 174,000 jobs per month this year, down from the average monthly gain of 187,000 in 2016. But then a slowdown in job growth is normal when the labor market nears full employment. These are some interesting numbers. The economy needs to create 75,000 to 100,000 jobs per month to keep up with growth in the working age population. Some other numbers this week, well, trade deficit. The U.S. trade deficit increased to a 9-month high in October due to rising oil prices and the widening of America's long-standing deficits with China and Mexico. The worsening trade deficit came even as exports to China and Mexico were the strongest in more than 3 years, which some economists said challenged the Trump administration's argument that the United States was being disadvantaged in its dealings with trade partners. The country's import bill was also boosted by food imports, which were the highest on record. There were also increases in imports of cell phones and other goods. Imports from China and Mexico were the highest on record in October. There are still some earnings reports due to deal with, and there were some earnings reports that did come out this week. But as we look ahead to next week, there still will be some earnings reports that will be watched carefully. And the other areas that we'll be watching will be some of the details on what is going on with some of the weaker segments of the economy. So that's coming up next week, and we'll certainly cover it here on the market sponsored by the CME Group. But as we look ahead to next week and what the market will be considering, well, let me see. The focus next week will be on the Federal Reserve's Federal Open Market Committee. It starts its 2-day meeting on Tuesday. We'll announce its interest rates decision on the next day, not expecting any surprises there. But U.S. inflation and retail sales data under the spotlight next week. The Labor Department expected to report on Wednesday. The Consumer Price Index went up 0.4% in November. The core CPI, which takes out the volatile food and energy components, likely went up 0.2% after a similar gain in October. Then a report on Thursday from the Commerce Department likely will show that retail sales went up 0.3% in November, after climbing 0.2% in October. Other data due for release next week includes the Producer Price Index for November and Federal Reserve data on Friday, likely to show industrial production gaining 0.3%. Investors will be focusing on just a few earnings reports on Thursday. Oracle Corporation, Adobe Systems, and Costco Wholesale Corporation will report their earnings after the closing bell. And next week, the European Central Bank will announce its interest rate decision on Thursday. The Federal Reserve Bank of New York will co-host Transforming Communities, Driving and Assessing Investment. That conference will take place in New York on Tuesday. Southwest Airlines CEO Gary Kelly will address the Wings Club in New York at the group's monthly luncheon on Thursday. And Bank of Canada Governor Stephen Poloz will give a speech on Thursday in his last scheduled remarks of the year. So there is a fair amount of activity going on in the marketplace, despite the fact that a lot of people say we're into the holiday doldrums. Well, what about agriculture trade, and are we in the holiday doldrums on commodity trading and prices? We'll get that report coming up when Max Armstrong visits with our market guest for the week, Naomi Bloom of Stewart Peterson in West Bend, Wisconsin. That coming when we continue here on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
So, what happened in the world of agricultural commodity trade this week, and what could be happening? There's a story that I'll touch on later that could signal some challenges for the biofuel industry, particularly ethanol. But this week, Max Armstrong welcomed into our studios Naomi Bloom. She's a market analyst with Stewart Peterson in West Bend, Wisconsin. And let's check in with Max as he says hello to Naomi.
It's great to have you back. Happy holidays to you.
Yes, thank you. Same to you.
We've been decking the halls around here, and we're in that that holiday spirit, to be sure. Looking on the calendar, it's kind of a light report calendar, but there are a couple of them that loom out there that could be of interest before the January tally is reported there, when we get a bunch of reports, including, wheat acreage and final production numbers on corn and beans for 2017. But in the week ahead, USDA has a chance to adjust numbers a little bit, update us on some numbers. Coming up on Tuesday, I think there's a report.
Yes, that's correct. And traditionally, the December report doesn't do too much in the way of changes for yield or acres or anything like that. There'll probably be some slight tweaks on the demand table. Specifically, I think what the industry is watching is for corn, will ethanol numbers even go a little higher yet for corn demand for ethanol? And then on the soybean side, will the export numbers be pulled down? Because our export pace is a little bit behind where the USDA was thinking we'd be at. And then on the global front, what we're going to be looking for is if production numbers in South America might actually be down because of the weather issues that are developing there, and second crop corn in Argentina is supposed to be a little bit lower, and even Brazil. And so there's some things to be watching for, and exports there too. Brazil soybean exports are ahead of pace.
On your Twitter account the other day, you posted an interesting chart, a pie chart that showed where soybeans are growing in the world. And it reinforces why many of us, I think, the first thing in the morning wonder what's going on with South American weather, because truly, you look at, half of the world's production of soybeans come out of those two. Well, I guess you throw in Paraguay as well, but Brazil and Argentina are the big producers, and that's a big, big chunk of that pie.
Oh, for sure, and that is why during these winter months, the market trades every single weather forecast that comes out of South America, and it's big swings with the market prices because of how much production potential they have there. And in La Nina years, Argentina, when they have that, which is what's going on right now, production can be down anywhere from 5 to 18%. So I think with the new hybrids out there, because we learned that lesson this year in the United States, but will their production be lower? Because our global demand is so strong, if there truly is a production hiccup down there, that'll result in higher prices around the world. Nothing that's going to just send that market sky racing higher or anything like that, but it's enough to keep it supported.
You beg an interesting question there, I guess I would follow up on. Is there the possibility, very soon perhaps, even for the next planting season in the United States, where all of the worry about the weather Yeah, about getting this crop in the ground and getting it started. Finally, the market gets to a point where traders say, wait a minute, we're going to get a good size production anyway. All of this worry about not getting a crop planted is worry about nothing. I mean, you look at what happened in the United States in 2017.
Yeah, and that is, I totally agree. I think we are almost getting to that point. When I talk with farmers, what it sounds like that the new hybrids are able to just hang in there and survive, and then as soon as they get a quarter or a half inch of rain, boom, they can just grow a foot almost overnight. And so that's what the science has done. And we really may be getting to the point where, unless it's a 2012 drought where there's no rain and high temperatures, any two-week period of dry weather might become a non-event.
You talked about the possible slackening of exports, that USDA might back away from those numbers a little bit. Is that because we've continued to see a strong dollar? Is that a part of that story, too?
Yeah, I would say that's a component of it. The other part of it is that for some of our marketplace, Mexico has said, well, just in case NAFTA, this whole agreement goes haywire, they've opened their doors to South America to be importing. The other part of it is that the South American production had been so strong that they are now just able to be a bigger market share on the global front. And so they are just naturally taking business from us. What is interesting to keep in mind is that in January and early February, that is oftentimes when the United States will pick up a lot of our exports to China ahead of their Chinese New Year, because that is when the Chinese market will know for sure what's actually happening in South America, and do they then need to come hot and heavy to the United States just in case it looks like there's a production issue down there. So I haven't given up hope to where I think, oh, we're never going to, you know, have these strong exports again. I'm giving it a few more weeks. But you might see the USDA lower the demand front for exports because we are behind.
Some people have said we may see a weakening of the dollar as we get into 2018. That certainly would be friendly, at least to a minor extent, would it not? And encouraging some buying from us versus, you know, depending on what the currency relationship is with the real in South America.
Yeah, absolutely. And just the thing for listeners to remember is that when our dollar is weaker and lower, it makes it cheaper for other countries to import our products. And so the dollar has been hanging around the 94 level, 92, back and forth in that area. And with new policies coming ahead with our administration and potentially with the new tax plan, the dollar is at a point where it could probably have some movement. And if it is lower, good news for our exports.
What's your opinion of the degree to which the market is prepared for perhaps some bad news on NAFTA? You know, there's been angst since way back early in the year about what could happen to the North American Free Trade Agreement, mindful of the fact that we sell so much to Mexico, especially hogs and corn, but grain, sorghum, and other products too. Canada is not an insignificant market for us. If something were to go south there and all of a sudden the president would prevail over the recommendations of some of his cabinet officers, including the Secretary of Agriculture, and say, we're going to scrap the North American Free Trade Agreement. What's the market reaction immediately in your mind? What would it be then 2 or 3 weeks down the road?
Yeah, that would be the black swan if Mr. President Trump were to poo-poo NAFTA. The market reaction would be, oh, no, we're never going to export anything. Then, therefore, more supplies in our country. Therefore, our hog prices go lower, our grain prices go lower in a short-term reaction. Longer term, you'd have to see what the rhetoric is along the way. But once those demand destruction fears are out there, oftentimes it can take months to potentially a year to just fix things. So I'm very hopeful that everyone gets along and we don't have any major discord. And that is a topic that I watch every day and do my Google searches on, any additional news that's coming out and what other countries are thinking, too. It's so important.
It's interesting, though, to ponder, given the fact that markets tend to overreact. And think back to the election last year, November of 2016. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. You know, the market took a terrible tumble and immediately bounced back and hasn't looked back since. I mean, it's continued to climb over the course of more than a year here. Markets do overreact sometimes, and then the reaction can be very strong sometimes.
Yeah, that's a great point, too. So be ready for either scenario to fall from the standpoint of if the market reacts and things prices go lower, know immediately what you're going to be doing with grain that you have at home and when you would be selling it. And on the flip side, if we can get a positive reaction and prices can work higher from any means, then use that as your selling opportunity for any additional unpriced grain as markets work higher. But I think you brought up the biggest point, that that might be something that is the biggest fundamental factor to be watching as we head into the new year.
Your farmer customers, when there's a little bit of a bump in prices, are they loading up the trucks?
For beans, yes, they have been. And the rally that we had this week met a lot of bean selling for anything that was left with old crop. And we even got going on the new crop sales as well, because the November contract was up near the 1025 level.
Yeah.
So it's at a great place to get started. Of course, the corn market hasn't given us anything. It's just stuck in that 10-cent range. It probably is going to be there for a little while until we get a better feel for maybe any weather issues in South America and things like that. But yes, on the rallies, beans especially, cash sales have been made.
Ethanol demand, it continues to look quite strong, as a matter of fact. We don't see any weakening of the ethanol demand, do we? I mean, in terms of buying ethanol out of these plants and serving the export markets, for example?
Right. Exports have been very strong for ethanol. China has been importing more ethanol because they're trying to up their production numbers. And on the USDA reports, that's the one category that has stayed constant. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw more growth there for corn for ethanol. It is the one thing that the administration has said we're not going to mess with.
And I guess what comes to mind here, too, is we have another pig crop report coming up the end of December, another sign of what's going on with the livestock herd in the United States. You folks will be watching that number, too, no doubt.
Yeah, we're looking for bigger production numbers there for the hogs. Some people are thinking that we're going to see an additional 2 to 3% growth in production. Now, it's been helpful, of course, that we have the new plants that have come on, and so that is helping. And our exports for October hogs were up 10% from the year prior. And I really, for the month of November, was trying to figure out, why is this hog market rallying when we have so much supply? The hogs that are coming to market, they're heavy. And so it is that export market that carried us. And so now we have a new month. We've got the holidays coming. Some of that holiday demand has already been met, and we've had a little bit of a setback in the hog prices. So it'll be very curious to see where the hog numbers end up being at in that December report coming up. I think at this time, any rallies for hogs are an opportunity to sell just because the production numbers are there. But then I think, too, of a few years back during the winter months when we had the PED virus so bad, where that just really, you know, wiped out some of the herd from the standpoint of the babies that were born. You know, they got the flu. It was essentially what the PED virus was. And I wonder, I'm sure we have better practices now to make sure that that doesn't happen. But what if there was another outbreak like that? So, yeah, lots of going on in the hog market right now.
But your reminder of the strong pork exports is also a reminder of the fragile nature, perhaps, of that market, too, relative to some kind of a NAFTA decision that could be negative. So
you're right.
One more reason to watch what happens with NAFTA.
Yes, yes, very true.
Indeed, all of us in agriculture and many of us outside agriculture will be watching NAFTA. Max with Naomi Bloom, market analyst for Stewart Peterson, based in West Bend, Wisconsin. More to come on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
I debated whether or not I should start this week's edition of The Markets with this story or cover the Wall Street story, because I have some concerns about this story and what it could bring to American agriculture. Here's the headline on Reuters. White House pressures Big Corn to meet on U.S. biofuels policy. And here is the story. President Donald Trump's administration called two lawmakers from the U.S. Corn Belt to convince them to join talks about potential changes to biofuels policy to ease the burden on oil refineries. That's according to a spokesman for one of the lawmakers and a source briefed on the matter. Now, that effort is the clearest sign yet that the president is seeking to mediate the long-running dispute between the U.S. oil industry and corn growers over the Renewable Fuel Standards, that's RFS, a law that requires refiners to blend increasing volumes of biofuels like corn-based ethanol every year into the nation's fuels. Here's what the poor refiners are saying. They say the law is putting them out of business, but ethanol interests have vehemently opposed any changes. And so White House Chief of Staff General John Kelly on Thursday called Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of corn-growing state Iowa, a leading supporter of the biofuels industry, to discuss the possibility of a meeting. Grassley's office indicated that to Reuters today. And Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue called Republican Senator Joni Ernst, also of Iowa, on the same issue. Trump and senior cabinet officials met with nine Republican senators from states with oil refineries on Thursday, including Ted Cruz of Texas. Some of the senators said after the meeting that Trump was interested in having all sides on the issue work together toward a solution. A spokesman for Grassley's office said that Grassley would, of course, meet with any senator who requests a meeting. The spokesman added that Kelly, in his call to Grassley, reiterated the president's unwavering commitment to ethanol, the RFS, and Midwestern farmers. But a new meeting could be scheduled as early as this week, according to one of the sources. Refiners oppose the RFS because they say it costs them hundreds of millions of dollars a year in blending and regulatory expenses while propping up demand for rival fuels. Boy, I could comment editorially on that one for an hour or two, believe me, in light of what we went through during the lineup to get gas days back in the oil embargo and a lot, but that's a meeting to keep an eye on. Another meeting we kept an eye on this week was the Illinois Farm Bureau. They held their annual meeting in Chicago. A lot of other state farm bureaus holding their annual meeting as well. In Illinois, Rich Giebert Jr. Was reelected to his term as president, and a new vice president was elected, Brian Duncan of Ogle County, Illinois. And then a reminder that that five-year event is here once again. The Ag Census is underway. You should be getting letters and forms in the mail starting right now this month. That census began in 1840, and they conduct it every 5 years to get a complete picture of American agriculture. Farm operations that produced and sold at least $1,000 of agricultural product in 2017 are scheduled, and the resulting data will be used by farmers, ranchers, trade associations, researchers, policymakers, academics, and many others to help make some important decisions in farm policy. So anyway, that's where we've been this week, covering activities in the world of agriculture. We're looking forward to an early start to the big meeting season right after the 1st of January. We are going to have the American Farm Bureau Convention, and that will be in Nashville at the Opryland Hotel this year. Thank you for joining us this week. We head to Washington, D.C. to do our annual interview with the Secretary of Agriculture, looking back and looking ahead. Thank you for joining us. Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.